When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, the show where you get the inside access to the best minds in the game. Each week, Chris has the privilege of chatting with top instructors, legendary players, course architects, and industry insiders. If you're looking to improve your game, gain a new perspective, or just hear some incredible golf stories, you are indeed in the right place.
You see, Chris, I haven't spoken to a press man in my life that is knowledgeable, seriously, as you are. Never.
You do such a great job. You kind of makes me feel good all of a sudden.
You do so much for the game. You're so kind to all of us that are out there in the game. You know, we need more people like you in the game of golf.
Thank you for pressing play. Now, grab your clubs, step up to the tee, and let's get started. This is Next on the Tee.
Hello, folks, and welcome into this week's edition of Next on the Tee. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro. I hope you're enjoying a wonderful week. And wherever you're listening to the show, whether it's on your phone, in your car, on your computer, on your iPad, thank you. Thank you for making Next on the Tee a part of your weekly golf content. Folks, I've got a really fun couple of hours coming up for you this week between parts one and two of the show. I'm so excited about that. I'm also starting to get excited because the temperatures are starting to get warm outside. I'm pushing my ankle a little bit. I'm getting more comfortable standing over putts nowadays. I've got the practice mat and the hitting net set up in the backyard. I'm trying to be good, follow the advice of my physical therapist and, of course, my wife, and go easy and not overdo it. But it's so hard when it's sunny and the temperatures are in the 60s and 70s. My ankle is saying, easy now, while my mind is like, as my buddy Angelo always says to me when we're on our buddy's trip, get your shoes on. Get your shoes on. Let's go. So it's a tug of war, but getting excited. Golf season is about to get underway. Anyway, about this week's show, I've got a great lineup in store for you. Leading off is going to be the VP of merchandising for our friends over at the PGA Superstore, Ben Helmrath. Ben also happens to be the team coordinator for the Atlanta Drive of the TGL League, so he's neck deep in all of the data for them. He helps team captain Justin Thomas set up their match day lineup and outlines when and how to use the hammer strategy. They put that together as a team. They set out all the possible scenarios, and they are absolutely ready to throw the hammer whenever it makes sense. He's right down there on the floor with the team at SoFi Stadium, so he's going to take us inside their team strategy meetings. Plus, with the in-home golf simulator market starting to explode, it's exciting to hear how prices are coming way down and ownership is becoming a real option for all of us. Ben's going to share his insights there as well when he joins me here in just a moment. Following Ben, Champions Tour pro Wes Short Jr. is going to make his Next on the Tee debut. Bob Estes reached out to me a while back and said, you got to have Wes on the show. They've been good friends for many years. Wes has lived his whole life out there in Austin, Texas. He and Bob went to UT together. Wes has won twice so far out on the Champions Tour, and there are a couple of very amazing stories that have happened around Wes's tour career. First, he qualified for the PGA Tour when he was 40 years old. He was a 40-year-old rookie out on the PGA Tour back in 2004. A year later, got his first win out there at the Michelin Championship in Las Vegas. He qualified for his first U.S. Open at the age of 52. So look, this guy is a heck of an inspirational story and a prime example of why you should never give up on your dreams. As my Aunt Linda said to me a while back, quoting George Eliot, it's never too late to be what you might have been. Wes is going to join me here to share all of his stories and insights about 25 minutes from now. Then in part two, we get our regular monthly visit from the confidence doctor, Dr. Bob Winters. This month, Doc talks to us about the vital role that our dominant eye plays, not only with our swing, but also with our confidence. So get your notepads ready. He's got a couple of keys that you're going to want to refer back to. Write them down in there and keep those in your golf bag like I do. Then we'll round things out with our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry. TP and I discussed the recent interviews that he's done on his morning Instagram live show. You should be tuning into that each day from 7:30, somewhere 7:30, 8 o'clock he typically starts. He talked recently with our good friend Damon Hack of the Golf Channel and TP's longtime friend Jimmy Roberts. Then TP kind of lets his age show because he starts referring to me as Jimmy for the rest of our conversation. No kidding. You'll hear. TP tells Jimmy his thoughts on slow play and what's causing that, plus is aim point a problem, and if so, why? So hang around for that conversation. TP, as you guys know, is always a lot of fun. So again, a lot of fun coming up for you over the next couple of hours here on Next on the Tee. And as I say each and every week, not only do I appreciate all of you, I thank you for tuning in and taking the journey with me again this week. Okay, before we get started, I want to give a shout out to our good friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. TribLive.com is the leading news website for Western Pennsylvania with news around the clock. Pittsburgh pro sports coverage, a high school sports network, a podcast network, which you can find Next on the Tee on. So go out and bookmark TribLive.com or download the TribLive app for free and stay up to date with all the news in Western Pennsylvania and this show. I also want to talk about our friends over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company and Iron City Beer, a brand that I have loved my whole life and started drinking when I was 21 years old, of course. Whether you're a hacker or a scratcher, the secret to a successful day on the links is knowing when it's time to grab an iron, even if that means keeping it in the bag till the 19th hole. If it's been a while since you've reached for Pittsburgh staple beer, it's time to revisit Iron City. Thanks to their incredible new facility in Creighton, the best-tasting Iron City beer ever made is now available at a course near you. Iron City pairs well with any lie and sky and serves as a friendly reminder that there's always next round. Iron City beer, best enjoyed while enjoying life. And folks, this year, get ready to experience the game like you've never experienced it before at the Keep. It's the brand-new Bill Bergen and Reese Jones co-designed course up at Macklemore. Nestled high atop Lookout Mountain, the Keep offers breathtaking vistas that are even more spectacular in person than they are in the pictures and the videos. With its challenging layout and awe-inspiring views, every round there is an unforgettable adventure. Whether you're taking on the signature holes or just soaking in the scenery, the Keep is where your best golf meets nature's finest backdrop. So grab your clubs and join us up at Macklemore this year. The Keep is open for preview play and it's waiting for you, but you gotta hurry now because spots and availability are filling up fast, so don't wait. Check out both courses, the Highlands and the Keep, for yourself online at themacklemore.com. And then do yourself and your buddies, or yourself and your family a solid by getting your spot reserved now.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
All right, now back in Next on the Tee with me is Ben Helmreth. Ben is the Vice President of Merchandising Hard Goods for the PGA Tour Superstore. He oversees all merchandising functions across the clubs and accessories categories. He is an integral member of their senior leadership team. He is also the team coordinator for the Atlanta Drive in the TGL League. The Drive just finished the regular season 4-1. They're the number 3 seed going into the playoffs. They face number 2 seed, the Bay team, next Tuesday night. And I'm very excited. I get to have Ben back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Ben, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thank you. So, Ben, as I just mentioned in the intro, the TGL regular season just finished up. We're getting geared up now for the playoffs. Yep. But I want to get your overall assessment. How have you felt about what you've seen so far in season number one?
I mean, honestly, it's been amazing. It's we were all bullish, I think, naturally, but at the same time, a little nervous. We didn't know what to expect. We didn't know how fans would take to it. I think some of the players had just general question marks of what it was going to be like, et cetera. And yeah, it's every week has gotten better, Chris. Every week has gotten more buzz. I think this past week was really fun. You really kind of saw the breadth of it. The stadium was completely packed, full of celebrities. The excitement is in the air, and it's just, we've had a blast. It's been a really cool way to see golf evolve and change.
And like I mentioned, you're in your intro, right? You're the team coordinator for the Atlanta Drive. Jill Thomas, who is the chief marketing officer there at the PGA Tour Superstore and a wonderful friend of the show, she's the governor for the Atlanta Drive. Talk about working with her and that project and what your roles are for the team.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a lot of fun in this. It's been a couple years now that we've been working on it, right? So as everybody probably remembers, we had a bit of a issue with the arena last year around November. So it extended it. So it's been a couple years planning. And, you know, my role is obviously a little bit different than hers. Jill is more responsible for coordinating kind of end to end the operations and how the team actually works and flows. So think the working and helping out with the sponsorship side of things, the getting tickets sold, the you name it when it comes to that, as well as being a governor seat on the board of governors. So that's also what it naturally comes with. So helping just try to continue to evaluate and look at the media side, how the league is doing as a whole and provide perspective from a team lens. When you think more about my role is more about match day, right? So it's really about competing and match day. So from start to finish, it's really getting the holes a week in advance, building the lineup, who's going to play, and then in what order. So kind of looking at their strengths and weaknesses, figuring out where we have the best advantage on what holes, and kind of setting the who's in what slot, one, two, or three. And then from there, it's just working with the players directly on building out the strategy. How are we going to go off the tee? How are we approaching second shots? How are we approaching the hammer? Those kind of things. So it's been a lot of fun. We've had a blast. We were 4-1. Unfortunately, we didn't sneak out our last win. It would have been fun to go undefeated. But overall, it's been a really fun experience and a really big success.
So you're like the Ryder Cup captain, if you will, of this team, right? You're helping trying to get all that strategy and getting people in place at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, my mustache isn't as strong, Chris, but other than that, it's pretty similar, I guess you could say.
That's awesome. So to that end, let's take that a step further, Ben, because you're right down there on the virtual golf course there at SoFi Stadium. You get to check out the real-time data, which has to be a really cool experience to be down there right in the thick of everything. So take us with you down onto the floor. What are the things that you are looking at and seeing there in real time?
Yeah, so I think what's been really cool and unique about it is first off, to be able to hit into a simulator screen off real grass, off real sand, off real rough, that part's really been amazing. It translates the game really well. There is true penalties for being in the rough, as you guys have probably seen from some of the matches. That part's been awesome. And then I think where it's been really important and integral is spending time in the short game area. So you think when these guys are going to play courses, they've got a couple practice rounds. Their caddies are out there marking everything up. They know where they should or shouldn't miss. They know the slopes of the greens. They know all that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, in this environment, they don't have their caddies. So what I try my best to do is make sure they know and mark up on our iPad going into it is, you know, where are you up? Where are you down green or into the green? Where are you your chip shots running away from you to the hole versus upslope? Those kind of things are where we kind of know, all right, let's put ourselves in the right position. But then also we know where the other team goes if they're in a tough position. So that kind of gets into that hammer strategy conversation. But my job is just to try to help point that stuff out for them when we're actually in the play. Try to put them in a position where we have a lot of down grain, up slope chips. That's where you're going to see those chip-ins, right? So that's really what the focus is on a match night is just helping set them up for as much success as possible.
So let's talk about the hammer strategy. I think that is something that has evolved through the course of the season, frequency and that sort of thing. But when you're talking to, let's say, Justin Thomas, who's the captain of our team here in Atlanta, what kind of strategy are you formulating going into a match regarding the hammer?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a couple of things we look at. I mean, in reality, the main thing is I try to map out scenarios. So less about what hole it is, but more just if we're in this scenario, we throw the hammer, right? So trying to find those ideal places and using a lot of data and analytics to get there. So we've looked at, based on shot link information, most of the hammers we throw, Chris, I think just about everyone, you're always going to see us usually throwing them around the green. These guys are professionals for a reason. So just because we might have a better tee shot than the others, you have, like, we have no idea what's going to happen, and it's tough to justify throwing it there. So we look at certain scenarios around the green, and we try our best to find kind of a 60-40, 55-45, where we have the edge, we see the advantage in throwing it, but we also don't want them to decline it. Them declining it doesn't do a lot of value for us. We view that as a loss. So that's really what our strategy's been. And then a lot of times as they're walking out to the green, we'll kind of just review it and say, like, hey, if this is what you see, throw it. Or if you're here, throw it, that kind of stuff. So we've gotten a good rhythm. I mean, I will say with as much humility as possible, but we've dominated the hammer this season as a team. We've got a net, I think, of 13 gained points. And there's only one other team that's in the positive there. And they're not really in the positive. So that's shown that we've done a really huge, we've got ourselves a huge advantage off the hammer, and hopefully we can continue that into the playoffs. And I kind of hope their team coordinators aren't listening to your call, at least for a couple of weeks.
Indeed. Ben, I think the best part of Tiger and Rory's teams, who finished, oh by the way, a combined 1-8, it was really how much fun Tiger seemed to have in the matches that he participated in. He laughed a lot at himself. He laughed a lot at Tom Kim, as we all probably did. You know, Tom Kim seemed to do something funny every week, which was, I think, awesome. But I'm sure the hope going into next season, you know, at a minimum, is hopefully Tiger's team is a little bit more competitive. But we got to see a side of him that most of us would never have gotten to see otherwise if it wasn't for TGL. Talk about just seeing the amount of fun that Tiger and the rest of the players, for that matter, talk about the amount of fun these guys seem to have with this.
I think it allows them to be more of themselves, in a sense of, you know, when they're playing on tour, that's their job. And when you think about any of us in corporate America or any job that we may have, you might be a different person than when you're out with friends, or if you're a golfer, when you're on a golf course with your friends. Your personality is just a little bit looser. You're not as focused on, you know, your job is your job first and foremost at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday, right? I mean, you're sitting in your office and that's your focus. But when you're out on a Saturday morning with friends, you're letting loose a little bit more. You're having more fun. And honestly, it's a little bit of what we've been able to see with them here. When you see them on a Friday on the tour, if the guy they're playing with chunks the ball, they're not going to say anything. it's their job. They're playing for a large paycheck. It's a very different environment. If you and I were playing as friends with two other people on a course and they chunked it, we might talk a little trash, right? I mean, that's kind of the nature of it. And this is still who they are. They're very good golfers, but they're still golfers. They have their friend groups. They go out and play when they can. I think we're just seeing them in that environment. And for someone like Tiger, who has always been known as one of the biggest competitors of all time and has kind of that, lack of a better word, and pun intended, the eye of the tiger, right? He's always kind of in that, as fans, we've always seen him in the kill mode, if you will, right? He's going after everybody and trying to win on a Sunday. I think this is, and I can't speak for him, but I think this is the Tiger that maybe Charlie sees when they play, or friends of Tiger see. And I think it's refreshing. I think some of the guys are able to just kind of play a little looser and be a little bit more of their authentic selves versus having to be so uber competitive. Now, I say that to say they are very competitive, Chris, very competitive. But anyway, I think that's been really cool to see these guys get to just let loose a little bit and have a lot of fun with other friends of theirs in the golf community.
Yeah, and I think the PGA Tour can take a page out of what they're seeing you guys do. I mean, I know they're trying to get a little more insight to where we're talking about listening in on the caddy conversations and things of that nature. But I think there's probably some things that they can glean from what TGL is doing, because, I mean, I think they want more fan involvement. They're looking for more fans to really engage with the players. I know Justin Thomas has written a letter, right, talking about encouraging the players to engage more with fans. I think the TGL and what they're seeing there might be a way that the PGA Tour can learn a thing or two, if you will.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I hope that continues to happen. I think we've seen subtle movements, I think, in the past maybe year or two. I still go back to remembering watching Rory walk up 9 at Augusta with an AirPod in his ear and talking through his shots. So even to see those kind of movements, I think that's something that the fans are really looking forward to. And, you know, these guys have been mic'd up for all these matches. A lot of the things that have shown positive comments coming out of the league are coming from what you're hearing them saying, what they're talking about. It's really cool to see three of the guys standing over a putt and listening to a debate, how they read the break and stuff. Those are things that we don't ever get to hear them talk about and think through. And again, I think the more the league can influence golf to a wider audience, I think is huge. You know, there's been all the jokes about the shot clock. I got to tell you, I've seen some really good golf in the 5 weeks we've played, and they're doing it with 20 seconds to think about and hit the ball. So maybe there's some opportunities to see some things change for sure. I think overall, I think the players too might think about it differently. And that's what might be really fun as an outcome from this.
Yeah, no, 100%, right? We all know about the issues Tom Kim is having with slow play, and he's even addressed it in some articles that I've read in Golf Digest and Golf Magazine about it. But he talks about how in TGL, it's not been a problem to get inside that shot clock. I think this is a great thing that should come out of this.
Yep, I completely agree. And again, who knows how and in what ways. And like I said earlier, I think they've been able to let it loose a little bit. But I would argue that the environment's created them to let loose a bit. So to your point earlier, if we can find a way to create that more laid back environment when they're playing on a Friday, right? And just be able to loosen up a little bit, especially between shots. That's where I think it can start. And I think it'll help fan engagement a lot.
100% agree. All right, so let's project a little bit forward now, because the postseason's about to start. The Atlanta Drive will be facing the Bay team in the first round, 2-3. So what does Justin Thomas need to do in order for the Atlanta Drive to take down Ludvig Åberg, Wyndham Clark, Minwoo Lee, and Shane Lowry?
I'm not at all worried about our guys. I think they're fantastic. They have been playing fantastic all season. I think what gets me excited is, you know, when you look at some of the stats, we comparatively, we've missed a lot more fairways, we've missed more greens, and we're still 4-1. So to me, there's nothing but, you know, opportunity in front of us. I think you usually wouldn't see, if we're talking about the PGA Tour, whoever's fifth or sixth out of six teams. So whoever's in the bottom 15% in fairways and reg and greens and reg usually don't win. So to me, that does nothing but say we've got upside. So everybody should watch out, I think, for us. But yeah, no, I think the guys are playing great golf. I think we need the it's almost like playing the Monstars from Space Jam. The Bay is full of a bunch of guys that hit the ball 330, it feels like. So we need them, hopefully, to find some rough and some water off the tee, and that'll definitely help. But overall, I think our guys are great. They've gelled really well together. We have great team chemistry. They're having a lot of fun. And yeah, hopefully we can take down the Bay and then go bring a championship back to Atlanta.
Yeah, so to that end, and you mentioned how Atlanta just fell a little bit shy of going undefeated. Well, somebody who did go undefeated is the number one ranked team, Los Angeles. Can the Drive, that's what we'd have to do, right? In order to bring home the title, we're going to have to probably go in there and hand LA their first loss. I kind of, as a guy that spent a lot of time in Boston, I remember the year when the Celtics lost to the 76ers and the chant beat LA was out there. If LA goes and holds serve and the Drive win, I'd sure like to hear a lot of those chants at SoFi Stadium in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing for us is we've already given those chants. We did beat them. They, unfortunately, based on the rules, it's kind of like hockey. They have an overtime loss. So we took them to overtime and beat them earlier in the season. So, you know, we're not worried about them. We're not afraid of them. We'll if they make it to the championship and we do too, we'll probably try to beat them worse, to your point, than we did the first time. Because we didn't like the fact that we even had to go to overtime against them. But no, I mean, overall, I think everybody's playing really good golf. I think LA it's different. Like the Bay is, like I was saying, we joked, it feels like they're the freaking Monstars from Space Jam. They just truly, you watch Minwoo and Wyndham Clark and Ludwig swing the golf club, and they are just monsters off the tee. And then LA is a little bit more of a finesse team. I think more like us, very good iron players, very good short game players. So two very different matchups, two very different strategies to go into it. But overall, I'm feeling good about our chances.
Ben, I saw Arthur Blank's interview during the last matches regarding the future of the league. And he talked about the potential for other formats, maybe league expansion to more cities, plus getting the LPGA involved. What do you expect to see when we look ahead to season two?
You know, I think first and foremost, everything started with proving that the format can work. And I think we've seen that. I think the ratings have been great. You know, it's easy to poke at any of the numbers, but I think what we've seen a good job at is against comparable sports on the same days at the same time over the last couple of years, this is drawing a higher audience week in and week out. And to see it's really amazing, especially for a startup league. So I think going into season two, there's probably some things that we can continue to evolve and do better in this format. And yeah, I do. I think there's opportunities. You know, you're seeing a lot of parallels to what could be done with the ladies game. I think the LPGA continues to get better year in and year out from rating standpoint. More and more women are playing the game. More and more both men and women are watching both. And I think it doesn't hurt that these ladies are just unbelievable. When you watch them play golf, they're as good as these guys are. There's no question about it. So I think there's absolutely opportunities, Chris, to introduce that in some way, shape, or form. I don't want to speak for the league, but I don't see there's no reason. I think everybody in America would love to see, you know, Nelly and Lexi and some of the other players that are continuing to be on top of the board. I think everybody wants to see Charlie Hall, even though I think smoking isn't allowed in the arena. I think everybody would like to see the LPGA come in. And, you know, even to extend from there, there's been so much attraction with the YouTube golfers and some of the social golfers coming in. To me, it's endless, right? I mean, we've now seen this creator series start at the Players this week and at the Tour Championship last year. Why is there not a world where that can have its own expansion, right? I mean, I just think it's a bit endless when you think about it. The concept is a new way to play the game. So we should attack all angles of where the game is growing. Men, women, social, et cetera. So really exciting, I think, when thinking about the future of the league.
Yeah, same. All right, so let's switch gears a little bit, Ben. We talked a little bit about this the last time you joined me on the show, but the in-home simulator market is absolutely exploding. They're becoming more affordable. It's every golfer's dream to have a simulator down in your basement or wherever you might have extra space. I know you guys are beginning to install them in one of your hitting bays so people can come in and check them out. Talk about the in-home simulator market.
Yeah, it's been awesome to see it grow. I think things like TGL have definitely helped. I think the price point, as we talked about last time, there's as it continues to expand, like most technologies, the price point becomes more absorbable over time. And we're continuing to invest in the space and create an environment where customers can be able to see the product. We're starting to get to a place where hopefully customers can experience the different products in our stores, with more to come on that. And yeah, it's continuing to explode. And again, I think the TGLs of the world will continue to help. I think the more golf is growing, that also means tee time availability is going the opposite direction. So the more people realize that you can play 18 holes in these and in a social environment or a practice environment, the more that education gets out there will help. And then I just, you know, I continue to go back to, as a father of two young kids myself, it's hard to sometimes find 4 hours of play plus to and from plus warm up. I mean, you're talking 5.5-6 hours away. And that's not always easy for everybody in the world that they might be living in with family or work pressure. So to be able to still love the game and play 18 holes in an hour, that's really hard to beat. And the way I view it is simulators will start becoming kind of like golf memberships in some way. You can spend X thousand of dollars on joining a golf club, or you can get one of these in your home and create your own golf club. And that's kind of where I think there's so much opportunity to continue to see expanded growth in the simulator category.
Yeah, that's very exciting stuff. And I agree with you. To have the opportunity to go downstairs in a basement or wherever you might have space to put something in and to be able to get the hours of enjoyment with your family, and then you're already at home and you don't have to spend the extra time in the traveling, is perfect for most families. Let's give them a greater flavor though, Ben. What are all the options that are available to people? Because I still think it's got a stigma like, well, you know, I can't afford that kind of thing. You talked about how the price points are coming down. What kind of options are available for people out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to see how many options are becoming available at what I'll say kind of sub $5,000. And why I start there is for the longest time, you kind of more saw the simulator environment as being the price of a nice car. I mean, that's really kind of where that price point was coming in at. And there's a lot more growth that's happened in that lower price point. So I would say there's really kind of three tiers and different technological pros and cons to all of them. But you're kind of in the kind of sub $1,000 range. Rapsodo is a really huge player in that space. It's very portable, $699 for their key product. And the thing with all of these, as I'll say, is they all link to whether they have their own software or not. There's a lot of universal software out there like E6, which is a great platform. For a small annual fee, you can get access to thousands of golf courses. And that's what makes it cool, is you can use it and take it to a range and practice and use their app per se, like if you're on Rapsodo, see your numbers, et cetera. But then you can still also take it back to your house, plug it in, connect it via Bluetooth, whatever works best for your environment, and play, you know, 18 holes on a golf course. So I think Rapsodo is definitely a big one in that price point. Garmin has one as well, called the R10, at a lower price point. Then you kind of get into the what I would call the more middle range. It's about 1800 to 2600. That's really kind of led by SkyTrack. SkyTrack is a unit that sits next to the ball. It's all read by cameras. It's an awesome product. They actually have their own software. Unicore is another one that we've seen a lot of success with. And then kind of into the higher price end on that side, more at the $4,000 to $5,000 range, I think Full Swing is one that you're seeing on TGL every week. That's the one that Tiger is used and endorsed. Fantastic product. They're official partner of the tour, so they're using a lot of the tour courses, which is really, really cool. And we have a great partnership with them. And then also Garmin just came out with their new unit a couple months ago called the R50, which actually has basically the built-in screen attached to it. So you can be standing anywhere on a mat at a range, whatever, and have, I think it's an 11-inch LED screen on the top of it. And you can actually simulate and play golf wherever you are with one unit. So that's been a really cool addition to the space. But, you know, as I said earlier, again, we're going to continue to see, I think, this technology get better. Hopefully continue to see the price points become more absorbable as the technology gets better, and continue to see more players want to enter the space. And that's what keeps us excited about it.
Yeah, it's very exciting to think that, you know, here we have an opportunity now, and we talked about families, but boy, you can link up with your buddies, right? And play wherever they are and really kind of make this thing, you don't have to be sitting next to one another. You can be wherever and play golf with each other, right, through the simulator. To me, that's, you know, now you got your family, you got your buddies and your friends, and then the opportunity to practice. Man, this is just fantastic.
Yeah, and to me, it's absolutely so much fun to play. And that's where I think I can get caught a lot of is talking about it. But the practice piece, like you talked about, that's also huge, right? I mean, for somebody who's learning the game, for somebody who's new into the game, this isn't just for an avid golfer. There's a really cool way with a lot of these technologies to get better and get better quick. It's expensive to continue to go to driving ranges over and over again. And when you're at a driving range, what are you working on? If that ball goes right, Chris, like, do you know why it went right? No. And especially if you're newer to the game, that can get frustrating to you. You could think you're working on something and then the ball keeps going right and you could leave the game. You're not having fun, whatever that might be. This Yes. gives you an ability to truly see the cause and effect of what your swing is doing and why it's making the ball do what it does. And to me, that's a huge way to keep people in the game. So the more we can create an awareness and understanding of you know, price points have gotten better. And that, again, this isn't just for, I don't need you to know what your ball speed is to think you should be hitting in a simulator. I mean, honestly, it is for everybody. And hopefully it's a way to keep people excited about the game because they're learning the why behind what's happening in their golf swing, not trying to guess and then getting frustrated. So I'm glad you brought up practice because I do think that's a huge opportunity to continue to see growth in this category.
Yeah, and I love that because to your point, a lot of people give up on the game because they can't seem to get any better. And you talk about an opportunity to get better quick. I mean, you know, back in my day, boy, it took you 10 years just to go from awful to bad. And, yeah. And you know, a lot of times people would, they'd give up and go, you know, this is too hard. I'm not going to play it anymore. But yeah. Now you have the opportunity to your point, see what's going wrong in your golf swing, make those changes and then see it in front of you. Right. And to the point of it isn't cheap to go to the driving range. I'm with you. It's going to cost you $10 or $20 for a bucket of balls. But if I can sit there in my basement or wherever and use my simulator and use the same balls and figure it out, boy, then I can translate that to the golf course. And suddenly it's not going to take me 10 years to break 100. I'm probably going to zoom up there pretty quickly.
Yeah. And that's something that we always keep our eye on. I mean, since COVID, something like 14 million new golfers have entered our game and only about 2.5 to 3 million are still with it. And that's where I think if we can do a good job of telling that story that you just told about how these devices can make you fall in love with the game better, because that is one of the number one reasons people leave. It can be a frustrating game. I mean, hell, we see the best players in the world get incredibly frustrated and flustered. So, you know, new people to the game, it can be a very tough game to pick up and learn. And it's because there's so many of these intricacies of why the ball reacts the way it does off the club. And to be able to know exactly why, hopefully it keeps more people in the game. And that is great for all of us because we want more people to fall in love with the game that we all love. So that's where I think there's a lot of excitement around it.
Yeah. I mean, think about how cool it is, right? If you were to go over to a buddy's house, maybe you've never played golf before, or maybe you've just played a little bit, but all of a sudden you see the simulator set up and you're like, hey, what's this? Well, let's hit a few, right? And the next thing you know, you're getting somebody else hooked on the game and they're coming over more often and they're hitting golf balls and they're getting better. I mean, to me, look, the buzzword or buzz phrase around our game is grow the game. And we talk about the great job that our PGA professionals and LPGA professionals are doing with that, to your earlier point about how full tee sheets are. Well, yeah. You know, now as a neighbor or as a family member, hey, I see this cool thing. Let me try that out. And the next thing you know, you're helping to grow the game. This is just another wonderful sort of byproduct of what in-home simulators can offer.
Yeah, I completely agree. So that's part of our job. Our job's hopefully to continue to use our reach, both national reach and local reach, to continue to tell that story and create an environment in the stores where people of all skill sets can come in, see, feel, and eventually try all the different products. And hopefully they fall in love with it and realize that it's there to just make the game more fun, make it more accessible, make it easier to play, and make it so that you can get better. And that's ultimately what hopefully in-home simulation continues to do.
Do you have these set up in all the locations across the country, or when will most people be able to go into their local PGA Tour Superstore and check them out?
Yeah, it's definitely coming soon. Our hope is by the end of the year or close to it that you should be able to go in your local superstore and give this a try. So more to come still on it. We're still working through some things, but at a minimum, you can go in there and ask questions and be able to see and feel the different launch monitors and see the different offerings and price points. And then coming here shortly, you'll be able to actually see the product and experience the product in a different light.
Ben, one more before I let you go, but let our listeners know, what are all the exciting things that are still ahead in 2025 for the PGA Tour Superstore? What are we going to get to see?
Yeah, I mean, we spent obviously a lot of time on it. The in-home simulation is definitely something that's really exciting. I think in addition to that, there's a lot of really good product that's coming out this year. Some of it's already launched, some of it hasn't. So we're going to continue to be releasing new product, and there's going to be stuff throughout the season. So definitely make sure you're continuing to come in and look at it. And then in addition, I would just say, and not everybody knows about it, but our membership program is continuing to grow. We're continuing to to put opportunities behind it. And to me, in-home simulation is right. But until we can convince you it's right, for $299, you get unlimited practice in our simulators and our stores. And that's just another way we're trying to show people the ability to get better. So even if it's not affordable to bring one of those into your homes, know that we have the infrastructure to help you get better in our stores and a program that's unbeatable in price to do it. So there's a lot of fun and exciting things that we're working on right now. And again, from product and services, we're continuing to try to grow the game, as you said earlier.
That's fantastic. Let our listeners know, remind them again how they can stay in touch with all the great things you guys are out there doing, whether they're checking everything out on your website or they're staying track of things over social media.
Yeah, I mean, the website first and foremost is you're always going to see things. That's one thing I will say, Chris, is as more and more brands are coming into the game of golf, we may not carry everything in the store because as much as we wish we had a 200,000 square foot store like a Walmart, we just don't. But our website will carry it. So definitely starting with the website, it'll give you a feel for the assortment that we have. And then, yeah, our social channels, our Instagram channel is a lot of fun, a lot of good partnerships and a lot of good different social influencer programs that we've put together. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see what new product is coming out. So definitely follow us for PGA Tour Superstore on Instagram and other social channels. And last and definitely not least, visit us in store. I think that's where you're really going to see the world-class experience that you can get, the big putting greens, all the simulators, and the associate experience hopefully will be best in class. So we're really, really pushing any of those channels and hope to get everybody into our store this year.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And the local store here for me is the one here in Kennesaw, Georgia. The folks in there are outstanding. I love going in there. I go in there very, very regularly just to check out all the great new things you guys have available. But on top of that, the service that they provide is second to none. So kudos to them and to everything you guys are doing, Ben. I can't thank you enough for coming back and being a wonderful part of the show again this week. I hope you'll come back and keep us updated on all the great things that you guys are doing. And first and foremost, when the Atlanta Drive win this thing, we get back together and we understand maybe some pictures with you guys with the trophy and that sort of thing. It'd be a lot of fun.
Would love to. I appreciate coming on, Chris, and appreciate your partnership. Thank you so much.
You bet. Take care, Ben. All the best to you and everyone there at the PGA Tour Superstore. We'll catch up soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
See you, Ben. That is Ben Helmrath, again, the Vice President of Merchandising Hard Goods for the PGA Tour Superstore. Also down there with the Atlanta Drive as the team coordinator. How cool is that? To be down there right in the thick of things with the Atlanta Drive and getting into the data and helping to set up the match day holes and their lineup and their strategy for the Hammer and all of the research and the data that he puts together to kind of figure out when is the right time to throw the Hammer. And if this happens, let's do that. I mean, really, right down there with the guys? How cool is that? I mean, that just sounds like so much fun to be a part of it. And right down there on the what do you call it, the course or the floor there at SoFi Stadium and being able to be with the guys and celebrate when they win. And I'm certainly rooting hard for these guys to bring home the trophy. And shout out to my good friend Megan Mahoney over at the PGA Tour Superstore for setting up the interview with Ben and for her partnership over the last, I think we're about 7-8 years partnering with the PGA Tour Superstore. So be sure to go online, check out all the great things they've got going on over there. And if you've got a store that's local to you, get in there. Get them to get you fit for your equipment for this year. The golf season is kicking off. The temperatures are starting to warm up. Get your equipment set. Get the right golf ball for your equipment and your swing speed, and check out all the wonderful things that they've got going on there. They're great people. Folks over at the Kennesaw store are off the charts great. So I can't thank them enough for all that they mean to me, both locally at the store and as a partner. Hopefully we get the privilege of catching up with Ben and Megan again real soon. Okay, coming up next is a guy who's making his Next on the Tee debut, but has an incredibly inspirational story. A guy that got out on the tour as a rookie at the age of 40, qualified for his first U.S. Open at the age of 52, won 3 times between the regular tour and the Champions Tour, and that is Wes Short Jr. But before I bring Wes into the show, I want to remind you about our good friends over at On Point Golf and their fantastic On Point ball marker. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with OnPoint, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023 and they were using an OnPoint ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use OnPoint ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. And experience distance and forgiveness all at once with the new QI35 driver from TaylorMade. QI35 is designed to give golfers more distance from more of the face while maintaining maximized forgiveness through high MOI designs. Whether you're looking for low spin and maximum workability or easy launch and plenty of adjustability, it's available in low spin, core, and max models. QI35 also has a full assortment of fairway woods and rescues to deliver distance and forgiveness throughout the top end of your bag. Check them all out online at TaylorMadeGolf.com. Okay, now making his Next on the Tee debut with me is Wes Short Jr. Let me give you some background on Wes. He's from Austin, Texas, and attended the University of Texas. He became a PGA professional in 1987. A few years later, in 1994, he won the PGA Assistant Professional Championship. He became a touring pro in 1997, won twice out on the Hooters Tour in 1999, finished tied for second at the Reese's Cup Classic in 2003 on what was then the Nationwide Tour. He earned his way on the PGA Tour in 2004 as a 40-year-old rookie, got his first win at the Michelin Championship in Las Vegas in a playoff over Jim Furyk. After injury sidelined him for a few years, he made his way back out onto the PGA Tour in 2013 and made the cut at the Shell Houston Open. Later that year, he was the medalist at the Champions Tour Q School, and he got his first Champions Tour win in 2014 at the Quebec Championship by one stroke over fellow Pittsburgh native Scott Dunlap. In 2016, he fell just short here in Atlanta at the Mitsubishi Electric Classic, losing in a playoff to Woody Austin. 2019, he got his second Champions Tour win at the Shaw Charity Classic, a one-shot victory over a great friend of this show and a guest last week, Scott McCarron. Wes qualified for the U.S. Open in 2016 at Oakmont, which I can't wait to hear all about. And I'm thrilled I get to spend some time with him this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Wes, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm good. So, Wes, shout out to Bob Estes for bringing us together. How long have you known Bob?
I've known Bob for quite a while. You know, he was a Texas guy. And I've probably known Bob for a good 25 years.
So, Wes, how did you go from being at the University of Texas for a year and then making the transition to becoming a PGA professional?
Well, I started, I got a scholarship to Texas and then got married, had a daughter my freshman year. And I worked in our family business for about, 5 or 6 years. And then, unfortunately, they went out of business. And I got into the golf business as an assistant at Berry Creek Country Club in Georgetown. And I was there for probably 3 or 4 years. And one of the last years that I was there, J.L. Lewis, which was a really good player, went on tour a couple of times, was the first assistant there. And so we became pretty good friends. JL moved on to a head pros job at Forest Creek Golf Club in Round Rock, and I followed him over there. And we was there for probably 3 or 4 years, I'll say. And then JL moved to teaching at the Ben White Golf Center, and he asked me to come over there with him. And to tell you the truth, Chris, I found out pretty quickly I didn't care for teaching at all. It seemed like people wanted to take a lesson and go from a 100 shooter to a 70 shooter without ever practicing.
That is how we are, I promise. That's not unique. Wes, 10 years into your PGA professional career, you go out and you qualify for the tour. Talk about your journey from being a club professional to then winning out on the Hooters Tour and then at the higher level at the Nationwide Tour.
Yeah, as an assistant, you don't really, I don't know if you ever worked in the golf business, but you really don't get to play that much. But I tried to play whenever I could, and I was a pretty good player, and I won the National Assistant Championship. And it was a funny little story. JL went on to the tour, and when I was still at Ben White, and he called me and kept telling me, said, "Hey, they're giving money away out here. You need to get out here." And so I went and I actually quit with Ben White. I went to interview for a head pro's job in Bastrop, Texas. And I just went over there on a whim, and they actually offered me the job on the spot. I didn't even talk to my wife or anything. And it wasn't the greatest of places, but it was would have been a start. And I would have made a lot more money than I was making where I was, which wasn't a whole lot in the first place. But so I decided, I went home. I told them I needed a couple of days to think about it, talk to my wife. And so I called Gail and I said, we were talking. And I said, "Gail, I think I can make more money playing golf than this. And I'd like to try." And she said, "Hey, do whatever you want." And so I started playing on the Hooters Tour. Actually, I had to qualify. I didn't go to their tour school. So the first three or four terms on the Hooters Tour, I had to qualify for. And after the third or fourth term, I was exempt for the rest of the year. So I played out there for a few years and then kind of advanced, won a couple. I had a really good year in 99. So did Chad Campbell. I think he won 9 times that year. Wow. On the Hooters Tour. And, it got me ready for the tour. I think, it's a good place. You, play 4 days, just like you do in a regular event, travel. So it kind of teaches you what you need to do. And, so I made it to the finals of tour school, missed by a couple years, a couple strokes by in 2000, but it got me exempt on the Nationwide or Corn Ferry now. And so I played out there for 2 or 3 years and then got my tour card. And I was a 40-year-old rookie. And my rookie season, I actually got hurt. Probably played, I don't even remember, 10 tournaments, 10, 12, my rookie year. It got me a major medical for the next year. And then I came back in 2005 and won in Vegas and beat Furyk in a playoff, as you said. But it was great to win. It seems like that's what you dream about when you're a kid, is making putts on the last hole to win, usually, or getting a playoff. Jim actually had kind of he hit in the water on the 17th hole, kind of made it a little easier for me. And I was thinking, though, heck, he already won a bunch. He didn't need it near as bad as I did. And so, then I was hurt most of my career on the regular tour. Didn't really have any. I think the next year I may have been healthy, but not really. Wasn't really healthy much. I had some back problems, and I think I missed 6 years, and then I ended up, I was watching TV one night because I couldn't sleep, and it was on the Golf Channel, and it was about Fred Couples, how he went over to Germany, and that doctor really helped him. He thinks it, you know, prolonged his career. And so I called the tour the next day and asked him to give Fred my number and if he would call me. And sure enough, Fred did. He called me the next day. And shoot, he talked to me probably for, I'm going to say 2 hours, telling me all about how it was, you know, over there in Germany, what to expect. He would make a phone call for me, get it all set up, and which he did. And so I ended up going over to Germany, and they did some stuff. And I think the third day I was there of the five was the first time I'd really been out of pain in 6 years. And so I still had 17 events left on my major medical for the tour. By this time, I think I was 49 years old. And so I played all those tournaments. I tell you, I couldn't believe I started in Sony. And I can't, Chris, it's unbelievable. I can't believe how nervous I was on the first tee after 6 years of really not playing competitive golf.
Is that right?
No, I couldn't even, I was shaking so bad. It was unbelievable. And my heart was racing. Man, those first few, it took me probably 3 or 4 tournaments to get where I could even settle down. And, but I didn't really play great that year. I had some, signs of playing okay. But the main thing it did, it really got me ready for the tour school for the seniors. And, you know, after getting my butt kicked by all the young guys, now I'm the young guy, you know. When you're 50, it's pretty nice to be the youngest guy on the tour. And so I really played good at tour school, won the tour school by 4 or 5 shots. And then I had a good career on the Champions Tour. And I think I was 4 or 5 years out there. And I've never had played in the U.S. Open. And I went and qualified for the one at Oakmont. And played great in the qualifier, and but I tell you, that Oakmont, boy, that course is something. Greens are a little tricky, and they made a big deal out of it because I think I was the oldest at that time. I think I was the oldest guy to go through both stages and make it to the U.S. Open. I think I was 54, 55. As you get older too, your memory gets a little bit worse. And, you know, I enjoyed the time there. I wish I had played a little better. We had a little, I think the first day on Thursday, I teed off the back. I hit the ball great. I was 1 over through 11, and I 3-putted a couple times. And we were on the second hole, which was my 11th, and it just kind of the sky opened up. And they blew the horn. We went over into this like makeshift place to get out of the weather. And I think we must have been in there for, good say 45 minutes to an hour. And when they didn't allow us to warm back up, they go be in position in 5 minutes. And my back was so tight from standing around. I think I went and putted. I had about a 10 footer for birdie, I think, on the second hole. 2-putted for par, and then tried to make a full swing on the third hole. And I think I triple bogeyed that hole, and I bogeyed the next, and I bogeyed the next, and bogeyed the next. And, heck, I think I ended up shooting like 78 or something. But, I was very disappointed that it didn't give us a chance to warm back up. And, there was some weird stuff in that Oakmont tournament too. I think, a ruling about 3 holes later to Dustin. You remember that?
Very much so.
And, you know, they gave him a penalty. They said the ball moved or something, but the greens were, luckily for us, it rained on Thursday because the practice rounds, I mean, I couldn't even hardly stop the ball with a wedge. It rolled 30 feet, it seemed like. But Dustin, you know, that ball moved, or supposedly, and, you know, they told him about 4 or 5 holes later, they gave him a penalty shot. but luckily he still won.
Right.
But it was a great experience. I'm glad that I got to at least play in one U.S. Open.
Wes, I want to go back to when you went over to qualify to play in that U.S. Open at Oakmont, and I'm from Pittsburgh. Very excited that the Open is going to be back there this year. You went over to Columbus, Ohio to qualify at Wedgwood Golf and Country Club. You go there and shoot 69 and 66. That gets you into the field. When you shoot that 66, and as you said, a kid that dreamt of getting into a U.S. Open, what did it feel like when you know you were finally going to get in the field?
Oh, I'll tell you what, that was great. It was like winning a tournament almost. You know, that round two, I just flew in. We had an event that same on Sunday, and I got in there so late. I mean, it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when we got there. And the second round, I mean, I played good the first round. The second round, I was playing really good. And then it seemed like, man, you know, I'm in my 50s now, and I'm going, man, and I'm not used to really playing 36 holes one day anymore. And we get to, I think there's about 6 holes left, and I know I'm in good shape, but my legs are kind of wobbly now. And I hit like a little duck hook off the tee on a hole, and I make bogey. And then the next hole, kind of the same deal, and I made another bogey. And then it was like somebody was trying to help me. A little storm came through for about 30 or 40 minutes. And they called us off the course and went in there, and it seemed like I rested. My legs seemed to get their second. I got my second wind. And the next hole that I had to play was a 210 or 15 yard par three. And I hit a 4-iron to about 4 feet, 5 feet, and made birdie there. And then the last couple holes, it made it a lot easier. And it was really exciting, to tell you the truth. I mean, I couldn't wait. You know, we still had another couple weeks to the Open. But, man, I wanted to play that day. It seemed like I was so excited after qualifying. You know, I'd probably been to, I don't know, 17, 18 qualifiers at least for the U.S. Open, maybe more than that. I started when I was about 16 or 17, trying to qualify. So it only took me to, you know, like 54, 55 years old.
Wes, I read that after you made it into the field, Colin Montgomery said to you, congratulations and condolence.
Yes, he did. He actually did. Matter of fact, a bunch of them did. It seemed like, because we had a tournament the next week. And, it says, hey, my condolences, you know, these greens are tricky. They all said, you know, the course is pretty tough. I mean, it's got some up and down undulation and stuff, but they said the greens, you could putt off green. And, sure enough, I had my trouble on the, I think I would have made the cut if I could have just bogeyed the third hole both days. I, like I told you, the weather kind of came went, and I made a triple bogey the first round. And the second round, actually, I hit a pretty good shot, and the pin was towards the back, and I hit a, I don't remember what iron it was, but I hit it in there probably about 15 to 18 feet short of the flag. And, you know, it gets pretty steep behind the green there. And I actually hit my putt just a little bit too hard. And as soon as I hit it, I said, slow down. And, well, it went off the green and rolled down some probably 30 yards. And I chipped back up, and I didn't hit it hard enough, and I knew it. And I swiped at my divot. And my caddy, he said, hey, that's a penalty. And I was going, oh, no. I moved a loose impediment when my ball was still in play, rolling back towards me. And so, sure enough, we called over, and I figured it was a penalty after he had said something. But so I got a 2-shot penalty, and I ended up making 9. I mean, yeah, 9. I made a 9 on the hole. Had an 18 footer for birdie and made 9.
Wow.
And so it was kind of one hole kind of derailed my open.
So let's switch gears and talk about the happier things. You go out in 2014, you win the Quebec Championship. You do so by a stroke over Scott Dunlap. Speaking of Pittsburgh, he's a Pittsburgh native. You shoot a final round 64 that included a birdie on 17 from 20 feet. You get to within a stroke of Scott, who was playing ahead of you. He had eagled the par 5 18.
18.
Yeah. So now you're one stroke back going to 18 after he eagles. And you go out there and you eagle on top of him. You make an 18 or an 8-footer after you hit a fantastic hybrid from 251. Actually, when you look back at that back nine, you played your final 10 holes and 8 under par. Take us through that amazing back nine.
Yes. I did something on number 8, I think. And I was sitting there and I told my caddy, I said, man, we really got to get on a row on this back side. And I need to birdie number 9, which was a par 5. And I did birdie 9. And then I hit it about a foot on 10. Then I'm probably a 40 footer on 16 for birdie, and then 17, probably a good 20 footer, and then 18, I probably hit one of the best hybrids of my life when I hit it in there. And like I said, it was probably 8 feet, 10 feet, and I made it. And it was, to win my rookie year kind of sets where you're set for at least next year, you know. You don't have to go to tour school any that year. And so it proves that you could win. Scott, I think he had won the week before, if I'm not mistaken. He won in Seattle. And he eagled I saw that he eagled the 18th and went one up on me. And so I hit really good shot in there and made it and kind of took some of his thunder away.
Then a few years later, 2019, you did one of the hardest things to do on the Champions Tour that season, and that was beat a great friend of this show, Scott McCarron, to win the Shaw Charity Classic. Scott won the Charles Schwab Cup that season. You shoot 29 on the back nine in the first round that week. Talk about the great run that you made that week and holding off Scott.
Yeah, you know, I like the golf course a lot. I think I played the first year we played there, or I played there, couples won the tournament. I was playing with him in probably the third or fourth, the last group, and he shot 61 that day, and I shot 64, and I think I finished fourth, D1, in a playoff, I think against Billy Andre, if I remember serves me right. And so I liked the golf course a lot, and when that year I was playing great, and I probably got there's no doubt, it was the luckiest break I ever got. You know, I think coming into the 18th hole, Scott he was probably 3 or 4 groups in front of us, and he eagled the last hole to get to whatever it was, 13, 14 under. And the last group, I was playing with Flesh and Gillis. And we were all pretty tied in the last hole. I think we're all 4 tied for the lead going into the last hole. They both hit kind of some poor drives, and they laid up. It's par 5. And I had 3 wood in there. Wind's a little against it. It was probably 256 or something. And I hit a pretty good 3 wood, I thought, but it drifted a little bit to the right. And we couldn't tell if it was going to clear or not. Well, apparently it landed a little short, and the next thing we know, it bounces up in the air about 35 feet in the air and goes a little bit left and goes on the green to about 45, 50 feet away.
Wow.
Then I knocked it in to about 3 feet short of it, and I knocked it in to beat McCarron by a shot, which he had already won the 2 previous years. So I kind of snookered him out of his chance to win the 3rd one.
So, Wes, what are you doing now? What are your plans for this season?
You know, it's kind of a weird year. I'm not exempt. I'm not going to get in very many tournaments unless I, qualify for some. I've been kind of lazy. I Bob and I went to, he has some buddies that he goes to Cabo, a lot. And me and my wife went with him this year and we played some, had a great time with Bob. And, to tell you the truth, I think I'm going to try to practice for the next month and try to qualify for a tournament there, in Florida, one of the senior tours. That's, that it's a new tournament or a new tournament name. It's, with the celebrities, like the pro football deal, but I've been pretty lazy. I haven't done much, in the last, since tour school. And, so I'm going to get off my lazy butt and get in gear and try to make some, because Bob's invited me to play and they have a tournament this year too. It's a partnership tournament. And, so we're going to, he's invited me to play in that with him. And, it's, I'm going to try to be ready and help him some. Be pretty nice to play with. Bob's a really good player and he's a friend, and, hope not to let him down, but I usually make some birdies. If, he can kind of get the, some of the holes, we should do well.
Sure you will. Before I let you go, how can we stay up to date with what you're doing out there, whether it's following you online or somewhere on social media?
You know, I'm kind of a hermit, I guess. I'm on Facebook and I don't really respond to too much. My wife don't let me, because I kind of would put my foot in my mouth sometimes. I kind of save what I think before I think about it. And but I'm on Facebook and Instagram. And so that's about it, to tell you the truth, Chris.
Well, Wes, it has been fantastic getting to spend some time with you this week here on the show. I hope I get this privilege with you again soon. There's a lot more to get into with you. You did a lot more over the course of your career. I hope we get an opportunity to catch up again soon.
Sure. And hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Bob, all the best to you. Wes, all the best to you and your family. I look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you. You too.
See you, Wes.
Bye-bye.
That is the great Wes Short Jr. And I'll tell you what, a guy who went out there and really built a career for himself, and a guy that absolutely kept coming back. One of the things that I think about when I was doing the research, looking at Wes's career, I keep thinking of the word resilient. He just kept plugging away at it. And eventually all of the good things that he was hoping for, I think, in his career ended up actually coming to fruition. Guy that got out there as a PGA professional, got out there on some of the junior tours like the Hooters Tour, worked his way into what was then the Nationwide Tour, the Korn Ferry Tour, got himself out onto the PGA Tour, did a lot of great things later on in his career, right? 52 years old, gets into a U.S. Open. Then he's out on the Champions Tour. He goes out and wins a couple of times there. A guy that was in the top 32 out on the Champions Tour for several years in a row, top 36, I should say, in the Charles Schwab Cup standings. Did that seven seasons in a row. It's not easy to do. That's a guy that was out there that was remarkably consistent and remained determined to play well and to do well. And that's exactly what Wes did. So kudos to him for all of the things that he has achieved so far in his career. And I'm sure teamed up with Bob Estes, boy, that's going to be a tough team to beat. I look forward to hearing how that turns out for sure. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on part one of this week's edition of the show. My sincere thanks again to Ben Helmrath and Wes Short Jr. for joining me. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Look, Ben is doing great things out there at the PGA Tour Superstore. TGL is exciting for all of the wonderful things that they are bringing to us, as well as the technology involved in the in-home studios, folks. I'm telling you, we're all going to have them in our basement soon. I'm very excited about how those are becoming more and more affordable. And Wes Short Jr., what an inspirational story. A guy who went out there and made his PGA Tour debut at the age of 40 and then qualified for the U.S. Open at 52. Please come back for part two of this week's show featuring my conversations with Dr. Bob Winters. We get our regular monthly visit from him. And of course, our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry, who now thinks my name is Jimmy. Folks, I can't thank you enough for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next time, hit them straight, my friends.
Coming down the mountain, I take a breath of sin. Can't tell the day or time, but I know this day will end. On a mission, I